Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From Edinburgh, Scotland, ladies and gentlemen. Still not wearing a kilt, but you never know. You really do never know. Ladies and gentlemen, a listener in Wisconsin passes on part of the explanation of Wisconsin Public Radio for why this broadcast is no longer on Wisconsin Public Radio. And it's not the cheese. Here it is. Quote, "The other problem with the show is it's satirical. Satire makes listeners uncomfortable. They may misunderstand it or, more seriously, get more confused by what they're hearing. This point in particular is really serious because some of these issues involve life and death." So, ladies and gentlemen, please don't be confused about life and death. Life is the good one, death is the bad one. And that's not satirical. At the beginning of the broadcast, George W. Bush.
The recent arrests that our fellow citizens are now learning about are a stark reminder that this nation is at war with Islamic fascists who will use any means to destroy those of us who love freedom.
Oh, I love freedom. But let's just scope that down a little bit.
The recent arrests are a stark reminder that this nation is at war.
That's right. That's how you can tell we're at war. We arrest people. It's not criminal activity we're after. If it were, we wouldn't be arresting people. And the buried lead department is overflowing this week with two items from the New York Times. First of all, a story whose putative lead was about the number of roadside bombs in Iraq rising to the highest monthly total of the war. But we'll get to the metrics of the war a little later. But here at the bottom of the story might well be what you might think is the lead. The whole story revolves around a meeting at the White House on Monday where the president heard from some outside scholars, maybe even some experts about the war. Some outside experts who have recently visited the White House said Bush administrations were beginning to plan, this is from the New York Times, for the possibility that Iraq's democratically elected government might not survive. Quote, senior administration officials have acknowledged that they are considering alternatives other than democracy, said one military affairs expert, who agreed to speak only on condition of anonymity, since he knows the difference between life and death. And that's not satirical. Quote, everybody in the administration is being quite circumspect, the expert said, but you can sense their own concern that this is drifting away from democracy. Wave democracy goodbye, ladies and gentlemen. The shore is receding. And this, from another New York Times story, again, a buried lead about a meeting at the White House with critics or experts on the war. Eric Davis, again, at the bottom of the story, a Rutgers University political science professor, discussed the regional upheaval that could follow if Iraq descended into chaos or was allowed to divide along ethnic lines. Quote, I believe that the American people do not fully understand the potential domino effects that the collapse of Iraq into disorder and anarchy would have on the Middle East and the global political system, unquote. Just in time, ladies and gentlemen, as democracy recedes, we've got a domino theory. The Lord does provide, and that's not satirical. Hello, welcome to the show.
You don't have no answer.
tired and there's Harry falling.
Yeah, but I got up, and that's the important part. From Grass Market. It's not what you think in Edinburgh, Scotland, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. The results are in on the recent war in Lebanon between Israel and Hezbollah, with Lebanon as interested bystanders, perhaps. Israeli Dateline Metula, Israel. Israeli soldiers returning from the war in Lebanon say the army was slow to rescue wounded comrades and suffered from a lack of supplies so dire they had to drink water from the canteens of dead Hezbollah guerrillas. Quote, "We fought for nothing. We cleared houses that will be reoccupied in no time," said one infantryman. Ilya Marshak, he said his unit was hindered by a lack of information, poor training, and untested equipment. In one instance, Israeli troops occupying two houses inadvertently fired at each other because of poor communication between their commanders. "We shot like blind people," he said. "We shot sheep and goats." That's good eating, at least. So I guess we've been advising them. I guess Don Rumsfeld has been over there helping them figure out how to have a war. Pat Robertson has figured it out. He prayed for victory last week with Israeli Prime Minister Olmert. Contends the ceasefire has rendered the entire conflict pointless. He quoted a Bible passage on the 700 Club from the prophet Isaiah. Quote, "We were with child, we writhed in pain, but we gave birth to wind." Oops. In other words, Robertson said, nothing came out of this at all. Israel went in, he said. But what have they done? Is the word of Isaiah true? I'm afraid so. Really? He was even asking whether the word in the Bible was true? Says a U.S. government consultant with close ties to Israel about the start of the war, and see if this rings any bells, ladies and gentlemen. Quote, "The Israelis told us it would be a cheap war with many benefits. Why oppose it? We'll be able to hunt down and bomb missiles, tunnels, and bunkers from the air. It would be a demo for Iran." Unquote. Another cheap war. And the price of the cheap war, a month from the London newspaper The Telegraph, a month after he vowed not to negotiate with Hezbollah over the release of two captured soldiers, Israel's prime minister has asked a spy to put together a deal for their release. Following the 34 days of fighting that failed to free the soldiers, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has appointed Ofer Dekel, an ally from an Israeli spy agency, to open discussions with Hezbollah. Israel is reportedly willing to give up 13 Hezbollah fighters in its custody, plus the bodies of many more and some dead goats that they just happen to have. And the final reckoning, Hezbollah, according to Reuters, handed out bundles of cash on Friday to people whose houses were wrecked by bombing in the war, consolidating the Iranian-backed group's support among Lebanon's Shiites and embarrassing the Beirut government. Maybe even embarrassing the U.S. government, which hasn't handed out any money to people in New Orleans to pay for the homes that the federally built levees ended up flooding. No, that's not embarrassing. Israeli and U.S. officials, according to Reuters, have voiced concern that Hezbollah will entrench its popularity by moving fast with Iranian money to help people whose homes were destroyed or damaged in the 34-day conflict. Hezbollah has not said where the funds are coming from, says Reuters, although other reports, quote, the head of Hezbollah is saying, yeah, it's coming from Iran, and even put a price on it. I think he said $150 million in one story. Yes. Reuters says it seems appears likely to cost at least $150. The Lebanese government has yet to launch anything similar. And lest I be repetitive, the U.S. government has yet to launch anything similar in New Orleans. Now, the money has been appropriated. The checks have not yet been cut. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have the music. It's a tragedy. But up to 20,000 items of luggage have reportedly gone missing at airports in the United Kingdom because of the British terror alert. The huge amount of missing baggage is adding to the travel misery caused by the new security measures. British Airways is reportedly hiring trucks and cargo planes to fetch bags and suitcases from other airports around Britain and Europe. It could be a few days before the majority of owners are reunited with their luggage. This could be an apology of the week. We are very, very sorry about that, a spokesman for British Airways says. File it under apologies later on. But according to the Glasgow Sunday Herald, just a couple of days ago, a pilot was stopped by a security guard while getting ready to board his aircraft at a bustling British airport and informed he had a fork in his bag, which would have to be taken away. The pilot says he asked if the security guard would come up to the flight deck and stop me pointing the aircraft at terra firma. Also, would the guard help me decide if I should use the fork as a weapon against myself or the axe that sits beside me on the flight deck? Common sense, concludes the pilot, seems to be a thing of the past. Says the Glasgow Sunday Herald, speak to anyone in the aviation industry today and they'll tell you the current draconian security measures are bureaucratic madness, security lunacy, stupid, and absurd. They are unanimous in their fury towards the government for enforcing regulations they see as, quote, ridiculous. Security measures are not followed uniformly, say airport staff, and safety measures are inconsistent. Some accuse Britain of falling in line behind U.S. paranoia. Why, I oughta. One pilot pointed out his bag was searched, but not his laptop carrier. Some were allowed to hold onto their cell phone, flashlight, and car keys, but one pair of their glasses had to be put into the hold. They were, however, allowed to hold on to another pair of glasses. The pilot pointed out that the crew were later given metal knives and forks to eat their in-flight food, adding angrily that it was, quote, utter morons who think up this crap, unquote. And he didn't say crap. Few of these aviation industry insiders will put their names to their comments. A member of the British Airports Authority, which run the airports, told how last week they had to bring their passport and national insurance number to Heathrow to get their BAA airport ID card renewed. They'd gained access to the secure area of the airport where they needed to go to get their ID renewed by using their old, out-of-date ID card. They referred to the experience as farcical. Another member of the Heathrow staff added, quote, just where do they get these nutbags from? Probably the nutbag shop at the airport. Staff cynicism is endemic. Quote, the sheep are buying it, unquote, writes one American pilot on a website used by air crew. Ground staff are prohibited from taking radios through security. Quote, how are you supposed to keep in touch and get your flight out in reasonable time if you can't communicate? One worker said. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen. Spreading like the other stuff. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the aforesaid apologies of the week.
We're almost sorry.
First, when you can't really be sorry yourself, call your PR man. The heartfelt apology that Santa Rosa Bishop Daniel Walsh made over the weekend to Catholic parishioners for failing to promptly report sexual abuse allegations was written with the help of a corporate public relations firm in San Francisco. That disclosure Tuesday contradicted an earlier statement issued by a diocesan spokeswoman that Walsh had written the apology himself. Sam Singer, president of a public affairs agency whose clients include Chevron, Texaco, Levi's, and the San Francisco 49ers, said he helped organize Walsh's thoughts into the dramatic statement that was read to parishioners over the weekend. The letter is the bishop's own words as dictated to me, Singer said. He asked for help in making an apology. He sat with me for an hour and gave me what he wanted to say from the bottom of his heart to set the record straight. When someone speaks verbally, you take that and put it into written form, he said. Before Walsh's written statement was released, the diocesan spokeswoman said Walsh had himself written it. She later said she did not know a consultant had helped Walsh with the initial draft. You know, sometimes it's hard to make apologies. You need a trained apologist. Dateline Kandahar, Afghanistan, a senior NATO official apologized on Wednesday to thousands of Afghans forced to flee their homes west of Kandahar because of fighting involving Canadian soldiers, but he blamed the Taliban. Tram Hudson, a Republican who's frontrunner in the race for the House seat formerly held by Catherine Harris, said recently, I grew up in Alabama, and I understand, and I know this from my own experience, I'm quoting here, that blacks are not the greatest swimmers or may not even know how to swim, unquote. Hudson has now posted a statement on his website, quote, I said something stupid. I apologize for it and would apologize in person to anyone hurt by my comments. To those who are understandably offended, you have my deepest apologies. And I want you to know that it was out of character for me. And those who know me know that to be a fact. A U.S. senator, on a similar note, has apologized for making racial remarks at a campaign rally about an Indian origin man working for a rival Democratic candidate. Senator George Allen pointed at 20-year-old S.R. Siddharth and repeatedly referred to him as Makaka. Quote, this fella here with the yellow shirt, Makaka or whatever his name is, he's with my opponent. He's following us around everywhere, Allen said. Makaka refers to a monkey that inhabits the Eastern Hemisphere. In some European cultures, Makaka can also be taken as a racial slur. Let's give a welcome to Makaka here, Allen said. Welcome to America, he said to Siddharth, who was born in Virginia, unlike Senator Allen. Allen told the Washington Post the word Makaka has no derogatory meaning for him, and he was sorry. I would never want to demean him as an individual. I do apologize if he's offended by that. That was no way the point, Allen said. Connecticut Democrat candidate who beat Joe Lieberman in the primary for the Senate seat, Ned Lamont, apologized on a local talk radio program this week for his campaign manager's description of Waterbury, Connecticut as a place where, quote, the forces of slime meet the forces of evil. His campaign manager, Tom Swan, well, they're always mean, swans. They've known to threaten attack Scotties who threaten their nests. Swan said the comments were in the context of a discussion of state politics, in which the mayor was the slime and the former governor was the evil. The mayor is serving a long prison sentence on child sex charges, and the former governor served a federal prison term for corruption. A U.S. lawmaker apologized this week to U.S. Marines under investigation in the deaths of two dozen Iraqi civilians in Haditha. Minnesota Republican Representative John Klein, a retired Marine Corps colonel, issued a three-paragraph statement under a deal with lawyers for one of the Marines under investigation. The lawyers filed a libel lawsuit against another congressman, Democratic Representative John Murtha, following his comments on the case. Klein said, I have concluded that those involved committed unlawful acts, in his original statement. I want to express my sincere apology to the Marines in the unit that was in Haditha, he now says. I am very concerned regarding any allegations. Such allegations must be taken seriously, but we should never rush to judgment before all the facts are known. Andrew Young, the civil rights leader and former UN ambassador, said this week he would resign as head of a Walmart advocacy group, acknowledging that he had made demagogic remarks about Jewish, Asian, and Arab business owners. Young has been lobbying minority groups and civic leaders to accept Walmart stores in their neighborhoods. In an interview published in the Los Angeles Sentinel, he was asked about the retailer's role in replacing mom-and-pop stores. Quote, well, I think they should. They ran the mom-and-pop stores out of my neighborhood, he told the Sentinel. But you see, those are the people who've been overcharging us, selling us stale bread and bad meat and wilted vegetables. And they sold out and moved to Florida. I think they've ripped off our communities enough. First it was Jews, then it was Koreans, and now it's Arabs. Very few black people own these stores, unquote, Andy Young. Walmart said that although it did not ask for Young's resignation, it supported his decision to step down. Young, in an interview, expressed regret. I understand I've created a whole firestorm out there. Uh-oh. It's unfortunate, he continued, and I should not have said it, and I apologize for it. It has not been my experience or my meaning. Dateline Headline News. Chuck Roberts, Headline News anchor, beginning an interview with the aforementioned Ned Lamont. Quote, Chuck Roberts, you know, I owe you an apology. Last week I led into an interview with a guest analyst and really botched the setup. The guest had wanted to discuss the Dick Cheney and Joe Lieberman statements suggesting that terror groups would be buoyed by your win, but I posed it badly, stupidly ad-libbing about some saying Lamont is the Al-Qaeda candidate. No one, in fact, used that construction. Anyway, I wanted to correct the record, and I'm glad we had this chance to do it. Northwest Airlines is apologizing to workers offended by company suggestions on how to save money that included buying jewelry at pawn shops, getting auto parts at junkyards, and taking shorter showers. The list, titled 101 Ways to Save Money, was part of a booklet for employees being laid off as Northwest goes bankrupt. It gave out 60 of the booklets before it began getting complaints. It cut the list out of the remaining copies, according to a spokesman. Northwest is reducing pay and benefits. We sincerely apologize to our employees for any offense this list caused them, says Crystal Notek, Senior Vice President for Ground Operations. We've taken appropriate action with our managers and vendors to ensure that all materials are properly reviewed in the future. The booklet was created for Northwest by NEAS, an employee assistance company. A spokeswoman for NEAS referred calls to the airline. Suggestions on the money-saving list included giving homemade cards and gifts, asking doctors for prescription drug samples, borrowing a dress for a big night out, giving children hand-me-down toys, and, quote, don't be shy about pulling something you like out of the trash, unquote. Dateline Beijing, Dell Incorporated has offered an apology and agreed to refund Chinese customers who accused the company of false advertising regarding the central processing units it offers in some notebooks marketed in China. Hey, dude, you're getting an apology. And finally, the Rolling Stones tour has arrived here in the United Kingdom. The band canceled two Spanish gigs this week because Mick Jagger was suffering from laryngitis. Quote, unfortunately, I have no other choice, and I apologize to everyone who bought tickets, said Sir Mick. Oh, and there's one more. Can't go without this one. Dateline Los Angeles. Tom Slater, a lecturer in urban studies at the University of Bristol, wrote a piece in the Current section of the Los Angeles Times a few weeks ago. It began with a line about the Central City East Association, casting it in a bad light. It read, the steam cleaning of the streets of Skid Row a few weeks ago, when homeless people were literally swept and hosed out of their makeshift encampments in downtown Los Angeles by employees of the local business improvement district, was a troubling moment in the battle over the neighborhood's future, unquote. Slater says he has received a flood of email. He now writes, I was invited by the LA Times to place recent events in the broader context of gentrification. The information re-street cleaning given to me by the paper turned out to be incorrect. The mistake was due to a miscommunication and an editing error. The apologies have been made by both the LA Times and myself to the Central City East Association for misrepresenting their actions. But Slater has had harsher criticism for the Times. To the organization itself, he wrote, you and your organization have every reason to be angry. The Times completely misinformed me about what had happened with regard to the street cleaning. I was led to believe by the newspaper that homeless people were literally swept and hosed out of their encampments, and I was asked to write an article about these events. I was mortified to learn that sentence was factually incorrect and would like to apologize for this error. My mistake was that I trusted a respected newspaper. I should have checked the facts, unquote. You know, his mistake was that he thought it was a respected newspaper. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Always satirical, always copyrighted.
What would you do if I told you some things aren't worth anything? And would your world turn, or would you stand by everything that you believe in? You're living on what went before you. It's something that we all do. Don't leave it too late to find out, to sort out the stranger who's inside. 'Cause there are no straight roads to happiness. The road must bend. And there is no one path to seek the truth. Each path must end somewhere. And I tell you, 'cause I love you, and you're hurting again. 'Cause I'm your best. Say in There are no street and roads to happiness. The road must bend. And there is no one path to seek the truth. Each path must end somewhere. I'm your best friend. I'm your best friend. And what would you do if I told you? What would you do if I told you some things aren't worth anything at all?
This is Le Show. Remember Iraq? The Domino War? Dateline to Crete. From McClatchy Newspapers, as security conditions continue to deteriorate in Iraq, many Iraqi politicians are challenging the optimistic forecasts of governments in Baghdad and Washington, D.C. Some are worrying that the rosy views are preventing the creation of effective strategies against the escalating violence. Well, how about an alternative to democracy? Forget you guys. Their worst fear, one that some U.S. soldiers share, is that top officials don't really understand what's happening. What year is this, ladies and gentlemen? Those concerns seem to be supported by statistics that show Iraq's violence has increased steadily during the past 3 years, says Mahmoud Othman, a Kurdish member of parliament. Watch the Kurds. The American policy has failed both in terms of politics and security. But the big problem, he says, is they will not confess or admit that. They are telling, he continues, the American public that the situation in Iraq will be improved. They want to encourage positive public opinion, but the Iraqi citizens are seeing something different. They know the real situation, unquote. Laura Ingraham, go argue with him. Othman charges that top U.S. officials spend most of their time in the green zone in Baghdad and at large military bases and don't know what's happening in the neighborhoods and provinces beyond. Says Shiite Muslim parliament member Jalaluddin al-Sagir, quote, all the American policies have failed because the American analysis of the situation is wrong. It is not related to reality. Says one U.S. military officer, quote, as an intelligence officer, I've had the chance to move around Baghdad. I think the greatest problem is we deal with is that our leadership has no real comprehension of the ground truth, says this U.S. intelligence officer. I wish I could offer a solution, but I can't. Sounds like a Democrat. When I have briefed, he continues, when I have briefed general officers, I've given them my perspective and assessment. Many have been surprised at what I have to say, but I suspect that in the end, nothing will or has changed. His name is being withheld to protect him from retaliation by his superiors or political appointees, says McClatchy. When L. Paul Bremer appointed an Iraqi governing council in July 2003, insurgents' attacks averaged 16 daily. When Saddam Hussein was captured, the average was 19. When Bremer signed the handover of sovereignty, it was 45 attacks daily. When Iraq had its elections in January 2005, it was 61. When U.S. forces killed Zarqawi, it was 90 attacks a day. The Asia Times has more metrics. In July, the number of Iraqis killed in sectarian violence was 3,438, two times the number of Lebanese civilians killed during the entire Lebanese hostilities between Israel and Hezbollah. That's a 9% increase over the death toll for June. Last month, an average of 110 Iraqis were dying per day in Iraq. The Times of London has more metrics. 40% of Iraq's professional class has fled the country. There are 11.8 hours of electricity a day in Iraq, but only 7.6 hours in Baghdad. The low estimate of civilians killed in Iraq since the war began, 40,000. Unemployment is between 25 and 40%. Iraq's doctors, there were 34,000 registered before the invasion. 12,000 have left, 2,000 killed, 250 kidnapped. But watch those dominoes. You don't want them to hit you on the way out. Ladies and gentlemen, CBS News has scheduled a primetime salute to Dan Rather, with the newsman talking about what it was like to leave the CBS Evening News anchor slot after a quarter of a century. The special, Dan Rather, a reporter, remembers, didn't exactly get a plum time slot. CBS will air it on the Friday before Labor Day weekend. CBS said it wanted to get the special on the air before Katie Couric's debut as the anchor on September 5th. The special was promised as a good faith gesture to Dan when CBS announced he was leaving the network. It's basically material from a primetime Rather special that ran shortly after he stepped down as anchor in March last year, but with a new interview. Dan is, of course, joining HDNet, a small network for owners of high-definition sets, to do a new show this fall. Says Susan Zirinsky, executive producer of the special, Dan was incredibly gracious during the process of making the show. He is grateful, she said. He is grateful for stepping back and looking what is an incredible contribution to journalism. He's very proud of that. Sounds like another episode of High Definition Dan, next here on Le Show.
Good evening, sir. Do you have a reservation?
Hi, Cheryl. It's Dan Rather. Is my usual table available?
I'm sorry, sir. The name again. We've had some computer problems.
Rather, Dan Rather. Mm-hmm. Table 17 has kind of been my second home base for the 20-odd years that I anchored the scene.
Yes, sir, I see it now. You've been moved to our inactive file. I can't access your customer profile, and Table 17 is reserved for Tina Fey.
Tina Fey?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I thought this was a restaurant for serious people.
It is, sir. She has a show on a broadcast network in the fall. We do have a brasserie-style property for cable and satellite talent, if you'd like to.
You don't mind if I...
Oh, of course not, sir. Right.
I think I can find my own way. Thank you. I mean, it's not Table 17, but... But it's not their brasserie property, either. No, it's not. So, Brother Rather. Yes, sir, Michael. What brings you to mid-Manhattan in the middle of vineyard season?
Oh, just some follow-ups on the Ahmadinejad broadcast.
Follow-ups?
You know, affiliate interviews just to reassure the restless natives that I'm not guilty of treason. Little things like that. You?
Oh, I was taping the interview for my retread tribute show.
The reporter re-remembers?
Yes, sir. My job, express gratitude, no regrets, 40 great years, looking forward, great memories, great challenges, great colleagues, you know the drill.
You want some bread? They haven't brought the menu yet.
You know, the bloggers would love it if I went on that broadcast and seemed wet hen mad or ex-wife bitter. Mm-hmm. We asked ourselves if we wanted to do that, and we decided that not only would that dog not hunt, he wouldn't even get up out of bed and shake off his fleas.
Well, of course, you've got your whole high-definition future ahead of you. You've got no reason to be bitter.
Michael, sir, please. The cameras don't work, the makeup doesn't stick, and I'm spending tomorrow looking for office space in the low 20s. I didn't even know they had offices in the low 20s. Thought that was little theater in big nightclub country. Thought wrong.
Well,
but congratulations on the get of the year, amigo. You know, I remember when I first interviewed Saddam Hussein.
Well, you know, it wasn't easy. His people call CBS News. Now, of course, they try to set it up for the evening news with Sister Couric.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that flies with our Islamic friends about as well as a slice of cement kugel. So then Fearless Leader turns it over to 60, and they say, we'd love to do the piece with our newest correspondent.
Enter Miss Katie one more time.
Well, by this point, the Iranians are ready to peddle their president to Brother King, as long as he doesn't take phone calls. When the Ayatollah in charge of media relations runs into me up at the vineyard.
Sorry, Hoss. Lost the thread there for a Nat's blink. What was an Ayatollah doing up at Martha's...
Apparently, he's one of the moderates.
Hmm.
Anyway, it comes together because of that chance meeting. I get one of the biggest scoops of my entire career while I'm on vacation.
Yes, sir. And then that same flutter of fruit fly's wing, I'm cattle pen close to 14th Street, scouting for a halfway decent place to park my hiney. Interesting turn of events.
Daniel, look, Sister Zirinsky re-interviewed me for your retribute. I'm utterly glowing about you. I call you an inspiration to two generations of young network television anchors from Texas.
Much obliged, amigo, but you're making it sound less like a tribute and more like an obit, making me feel more like Brother Jennings than Brother Rather. But... looking at it broomstick straight and moonshot true, it really doesn't matter what you said on a broadcast that's going out the Friday before Labor Day. Only people watching it are going to be Jerry Lewis' tech crew and the bloggers.
Daniel, you had a significant role to play in the unmaking of Richard Nixon's presidency. You wouldn't want to imagine him seeing you right now, seeming bitter about your tribute special's time slot.
Brother Wallace, all due love and respect, sir, please, but Richard Nixon was a whole different kettle of chili. He couldn't forgive his enemies. I'm just working on forgiving my friends.
Yeah.
Okay, but... Mr. Wallace, is it going to be just you, or... am I going to have to bring a second menu?
You know what, Michael? I'm going to let you fly the rest of this meal, Diana Ross, solo. I never really was the white tablecloth wine steward customer profile on the computer kind of hoss. Brasserie-style property sounds more up my creek bed. Probably get a plate full of hush puppies and some shiner buck.
Yeah. Yep.
Congratulations, Michael. And watch out. You're the next Cherokee in the blogger's sights.
So... just the one menu?
Yes, Lester. Daniel, tell Jerry Lewis's crew I'll be joining them.
Thank you, sir.
I'll either watch it live or I'll catch up with it on the website. You be well, Brother Rather.
You too, Brother Wallace.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you.
How do I know it's time?
I just decided. From InsideDefense.com, Department of Defense finds cruise missile defense gaps. Go figure, Department. But I'll read it for you before we put it in the go figure, Department. A Pentagon assessment of the U.S. capability to defend the homeland against incoming enemy cruise missiles has found what it calls capability gaps that may not be solved until 2015. As a result, the Air Force's Directorate of Operational Capability Requirements is leading a study to determine the best approaches for mitigating high-risk gaps in the cruise missile defense of North America. According to a request for information posted on Federal Business Opportunities. That's right, our gap is your opportunity. Officials from the Army and Navy counterpart organization, as well as the Air Force's Combat Command, are also taking part. So they're all in the gap. We are soliciting ideas for materiel approaches from industry to address the high-priority capability gaps identified in a functional needs analysis accomplished by the Joint Services Commands, says the request. Quote, as a part of this study, we also solicit inputs for non-materiel approaches that may be known by you to solve or mitigate these capability gaps. So if you've got any ideas for either materiel or non-materiel ways of plugging the capability gaps, call the Air Force, won't you, ladies and gentlemen? A suggestion that comes to mind when I read the trades for you, copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
examination.
Ooh, all we need is your participation. Yeah, people, then we all can reunite this nation. Oh, oh, oh.
Spread the love of the damn it.
All around the world, people now.
Spread it to every man.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for FEMA on the march. Yeah, F is for FEMA, as we know. And these are reports gathered over the last little while that would emphasize that fact for your listening pleasure. When reporters from the Baton Rouge Advocate recently visited a nearby trailer park to speak with residents, FEMA officials insisted on being present for the interviews. A FEMA spokeswoman says the department policy is not to allow trailer park residents to speak with new reporters alone. Americans displaced by hurricanes or floods may not invite certain people into their homes because FEMA says so. What could the agency fear that trailer residents might tell reporters? There's the breakdown of law enforcement. Crime and drugs fester in the parks, according to one report. There's fiscal mismanagement at the Department of Homeland Security, which includes FEMA. For nearly 2 months, Dakota Duvall and her five children were the only people living in a 198-trailer park in Morgan City, Louisiana. This, according to the Baton Rouge Advocate. City officials say FEMA spent $7.5 million to build the park and questioned why the park, with row upon row of shiny new trailers, remains almost empty 3 months after being built. Says Morgan City Mayor Timothy Mattei, there's about 50 more new FEMA trailers in various mobile home parks around town, too, and no one lives in those either. It doesn't really make much sense, unquote. FEMA refuses to say how much was spent to build the park or why the trailers are vacant. And as noted before, FEMA rules make it hard for reporters to talk freely to the few park residents about life there. But there's more. FEMA classified a joint venture with headquarters in both California and Texas as a local outfit in Louisiana this year when the agency awarded travel trailer contracts that were supposed to go to small local firms. This is from the New Orleans Times-Picayune. The contractual process was explicitly designed to favor companies in areas directly hit by Katrina and Rita, led to four deals, however, up to $100 million each for a joint venture that federal registers list as a San Diego company, a wholly owned subsidiary, as a matter of fact, of Fluor of Irving, Texas, one of the giants of the construction industry. Fluor stock has risen almost 55% since Katrina set off a contracting frenzy. FEMA awarded 36 separate contracts along the Gulf Coast. This firm was the single biggest winner, landing $200 million deals in Louisiana and two more in Mississippi. A spokesman for the firm said the joint venture met the definition of a local business, including possessing of a license to do business in the state. FEMA officials said the firm had submitted all the required documentation, but the agency was unable to furnish copies of the documents or to define them more clearly. According to a 36-page report issued by CorpWatch, of the $6 billion in hurricane-related contracts granted by FEMA, only 13% were awarded to local firms. Small and minority businesses appear to have been largely shut out of the contracting processes that were allegedly designed to favor them. FEMA will replace locks on as many as 118,000 trailers, presumably occupied, used by Gulf Coast residents after discovering the same key could open many of the homes. One manufacturer cut only 50 different kinds of keys for the trailers it sold to FEMA. One key could be used to unlock up to 10 mobile homes in a park of 500 trailers. FEMA was asking residents to be extra vigilant. Government officials have finally agreed to check for formaldehyde in the FEMA trailers, only after dozens of residents complained and environmentalists found high levels of the chemical in tests. The announcement from FEMA came 3 months after the Sierra Club tested 31 trailers in Mississippi and Louisiana and found that all but two of them had higher than acceptable levels of formaldehyde. Some hurricane survivors living in the trailers have complained of burning eyes, throat irritation, respiratory and sinus problems, persistent coughing, rashes, and nosebleeds. FEMA said the tests were ordered out of, quote, an abundance of caution. Same caution that got the keys made. And in the second largest grant of its kind ever, according to its press release, FEMA has earmarked more than $34 million to finance mental health counseling in Louisiana for residents traumatized by the aftermath of Katrina. This in an area where 80% of the mental health professionals have left. Second largest, $34 million. $132 million was appropriated for mental health counseling in New York City after 9/11. 9/11 covered 11 square blocks. New Orleans was 80% flooded. We are very excited about the difference this grant will make in the complete recovery of residents of Louisiana, said Dr. Fred Cerise of the Department of Health and Hospitals in Louisiana. FEMA on the march, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, by the way, one other thing. At the end of the story, FEMA's press release says everyone who is in the hurricane-affected area has been impacted by the stress of being subjected to the wrath of Hurricane Katrina, unquote. FEMA apparently doesn't know yet that New Orleans was flooded when federally built levees catastrophically failed. But there's time. Oh, and this week, we celebrated the death of Elvis Presley, who, according to the initial reports published just hours after his death, expired, quote, the New York Times, quote, straining its stool.
Well, bless my soul, what's wrong with me? I've been riding this pole since 2:45. I used to be as frisky as a 20-pound pup. I know to me, I'm all backed up. I'm all backed up. I'm all backed up. I can eat my feet from the western rim when I'm all backed up. Doctor said he didn't know what to do. He gave me some pills, told me not to sue. I just couldn't put a dent in his paper cup. Well, look at me, I'm all backed up. I'm all backed up. I'm all backed up. Can eat my feet, but I can't get a grill, 'cause I'm all backed up.
Ladies and gentlemen, a U.S.-backed plan to defeat Islamist militants in our friend Pakistan's tribal areas has backfired badly, according to McClatchy newspapers. The Bush administration is working with Pakistan to come up with a new strategy. How about not democracy? Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf, quote, sees that what he was doing wasn't working, says one U.S. official who's familiar with the new plan. He really has a mess. Now the government is attempting to negotiate truces, expand local police, introduce development projects. Some U.S. officials say Musharraf is seeking $150 million for the effort, including a massive development program. So why don't we move New Orleans to Pakistan? Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. Did I say that already? Now I'm totally lost. On Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 130. You know the usual places. And it would be just like me remembering the whole shebang if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you really? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack at the tip of the Le Show Chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. And a Le Show condolence to the family of Bruno Kirby. The obits forgot to mention, he's the limo driver in This Is Spinal Tap. You'll get the DVD and see the outtakes. The show comes to you from Century of Progress. I get no money from that. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.